to the best of the church's music for the season of Lent at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the season of Lent, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
The one thing we have to recognize that is true of New Testament biblical Christianity is that it embraces hope and never embraces despair.
I think thinking about the church not so much as an army engaged in war, as a community engaged in protest.
Apologetics is demonstrating that the proclamation of law and gospel itself is embedded in history.
The reason why we say that the Lord's Supper forgives sins, that baptism forgives sins, that absolution forgives sins, is because Jesus promised that those things forgive sins.
Amateur home improvers in Italy, love issues, etc.
It was just last week that Disney, a media giant, decided to fire an actress over something she had put on social media. It irritated social conservatives, traditional conservatives, but Disney didn't seem to care. Now, why is it that, at least in the American market, they could well have risked irritating, maybe even losing as customers, about half the country, and Disney didn't seem to mind? Why is it that corporations like Disney have been moving left in their policies and their politics, well, for some time, but it seems more quickly lately? Does woke capitalism make economic sense? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Tuesday afternoon, the 23rd of February. We're going to be talking about the leftward drift of many American business executives. Dr. Samuel Gregg of the Acton Institute will be our guest. We'll spend some time with Dr. Alfonso Espinosa, author of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February, Faith That Engages the Culture, talking about politics and personhood and sexuality as Christians interact with the culture. And then Pastor Tom Baker will be alongside to teach a Sunday school lesson on David worshiping God in 2 Samuel 7 and in Psalm 24. Joining us to discuss the leftward drift of many American corporations, Dr. Samuel Gregg. He's research director at the Acton Institute, fellow for the Center of the Study of Law and Religion at Emory University, and author of a recent column for Public Discourse titled Why Corporate America Loves the Left. Dr. Gregg, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you for having me on. It's great to be with you.
This lurch toward the left from corporate America seems to many of us to have happened rather quickly. How do you explain that?
Well, I think we explain it by understanding that this shift has been going on for a long time. It's just that it's only relatively recently that it's surfaced in public. There's, a sense that with a lot of business schools, for example, that many people look at them and say, well, they must be inherently conservative institutions because they're about business, they're about profit, they're about markets, etc. But in truth, most business schools reflect very much the culture of the universities in which they exist, and that culture is definitely left-leaning, progressive-leaning, leaning in directions away from what you might call standard conservative positions on any number of questions. So that's one thing. I think a lot of the education that many business executives receive is conducted in a context whereby they're exposed, sometimes directly, sometimes indirectly, to a sort of constant drip of progressive ideas. And over time, this starts to have an effect. The second, I think, is that we shouldn't assume that somehow business executives are particularly immune to the sort of general progressive-leaning culture in which much of our society leans now. The fact that someone works in business and has an eye for profit and may or may not understand how markets work and has to meet a bottom line, that doesn't mean that somehow they're going to be leaning conservative on any number of other economic and social questions. So this process has been going on for a very long time. It reflects, I think, what the type of education many of them are receiving. It also reflects the sort of the general drift of much culture in the United States and its very left-leaning ways. And there's no reason, as I said, why we should expect business to somehow be immune to this.
So in the past, there has been corporate support for progressive political candidates and politicians. What were their interests then?
Well, in part, it was about having a bet both ways, right? Because you never really know, except in some rare instances, who is going to win particular elections. There's always a chance that the other person might win. So I think it's fair to say that for a long time, corporate America has been giving money to both sides of politics. And this plays out in different ways. It depends a lot on who the particular candidate is. So if you go back and you look at things like presidential giving, it's very clear, for example, that in 2008, corporate America went for Barack Obama. One, because they thought he was going to win, so it's a very pragmatic thing, but also two, the Republican opponent at the time, Senator John McCain, would said things in public like he didn't really understand economic issues. Well, that wasn't exactly a confidence-signaling message. Things changed in 2012 when Mitt Romney was running. He got more corporate support because I think they viewed him as one of them. But then we see with the 2016 and 2020 elections, the corporate America very much supported the Democratic Party. Some of them gave to the Republican Party as well, but it's overwhelmingly in the direction of Democratic politics that they went. But they've been doing this for a very long time. It's not as if corporate America looks at the political landscape and says, we need to support the Republicans because the Republicans are the pro-business party. There's a lot of other considerations that go on, ranging from things like making sure that you have some way of connecting with, let's say, a progressive candidate who happens to win office, to the fact that a lot of business executives now are willing to prioritize what they think are cultural concerns that are of particular concern to them, in which they share a more or less progressive view, over the economic well-being of their business, sometimes their own businesses, and certainly over that of the country.
Does corporate America's support for progressives make overall economic sense, in your opinion?
Well, that's a good question, because I think the answer to that is it's a mixed picture. So, for example, I think many people in corporate America are looking at things like demographics. And they're saying, well, we have millennials coming through. Millennials are the only generation today that consistently leads progressive. But they're becoming more important. They're getting more purchasing power, et cetera. So to a certain extent, you can see a lot of corporate America saying, well, we need to make sure that we don't, minimum, we don't alienate those people. We need to somehow show that we're one of them. Another factor, of course, is that many people, not just progressives, but also conservatives, take the view that they want their buying choices to reflect their politics. So much of corporate America has said, well, we need to make sure that we are signaling that we are progressive as lots of other progressives. Now, the difficulty, however, is that I'm not sure the economic calculus works out. In fact, the research that's been done in this particular area doesn't really show that going woke, so to speak, somehow translates into increased profits. And the reason is there's multiple, even thousands, millions, maybe even billions of factors that go into the buying choices of, you know, for example, 300 million consumers in the United States. So there's no real clear evidence that this is in fact the case, that going woke somehow pays off economically. The other thing which I think they may need to think about is that there's also this assumption that they're building into their thought, and that is that somehow people's views remain static throughout their lives. Well, one of the things I've pointed out is that people's views change as they get older. Maybe they get married. Maybe they start going to church or to synagogue. Maybe they learn a little bit of economics. Maybe they see how much the federal government and state government and local government is starting to take out of their taxes. Maybe they start to become a little bit more culturally conservative as they get older. In other words, I think much of corporate America is making a mistake if they think that particular demographic groups are going to remain uniformly progressive in their views over their lifespans. People's views change. As people get older, they tend to become more conservative for all sorts of reasons. And that, I think, is something that corporate America is not thinking about when they're reflecting upon the economics of political preferences.
What do we know about Americans' buying choices when it comes to their personal politics?
Well, we do know that substantive numbers of Americans do give some consideration to their politics when they're purchasing particular goods. We've seen this, for example, in things like the fair trade movement or asking businesses to adopt particular environmental policies, et cetera, et cetera. But it's not just progressives that do this. It's also conservatives who do this, although in slightly lesser numbers. But there's also lots of people who do not say my political preferences matter to me when it comes to my buying choices. So when it comes to the American market, about, I think, something like 56% of progressives say that they want their buying choices to reflect their politics. When it comes to conservatives, it's a little less, but maybe just under 50%. But there's also lots and lots of Americans who say, I just want the best deal. I'm not particularly interested in the political opinions of the people that I'm buying from. So it's a very mixed picture. And I think, again, corporate America should be very careful before they go too far down this path, because I think they may find that it becomes very difficult to predict to the extent to which people factor in their political preferences when it comes to their buying choices, and also the fact that people's political preferences change over time.
Why would corporate America risk losing more conservative customers?
Well, I think it's partly because it's a type of demographic argument. They reason that we have this cohort of people that are coming through, particularly millennials, who are seen as generally progressive across the board on issues ranging from economics to cultural issues. And many people in corporate America are making the calculation that, well, that's where the future is, so we need to adjust. We need to be more willing to engage with that particular demographic by sort of engaging in what you might call progressive virtue signaling. As I've said, though, I think that's taken on a number of grounds. I'm not sure that political preferences matter when it really comes down to it, how much they swing people when it comes to their buying choices. But I also think that we need to understand that markets, and particularly consumer markets, are very complicated things, and there's numerous factors at work which shape people's buying choices. Politics is one of them, but economic need, economic wants, economic desires, stage of life, considerations about family size, how many children you have, etc., changing needs as you get older, all these things reflect and shape market transactions, and politics is just one of those particular factors. So if corporate America invests too much in that area, I think they could be making some significant problems that will come back to bite them later.
I thought I heard you say before that at this point so far, the bottom line of corporate America does not appear to have been affected either for good or for ill by going leftward. Is that true?
Right. Yes, I think that's true, which also suggests that there may be other reasons at work as to why corporate America has gone down this path. They range from things like the fact that, as I mentioned before, we shouldn't expect business people to be any more immune to the sort of constant pressure from the progressive side of politics to conform to their positions. We also shouldn't underestimate the willingness of some business executives to prioritize their political concerns over the economic well-being of the company that they run. So there's a number of factors, I think, which explain that even though there's really not very much evidence that suggesting that political preferences are swinging people significantly in their buying choices, there are other things going on that business people are susceptible to and influenced by, and that sometimes matters. It can even matter to things like if you're trying to get a particular contract from a local government authority. If you can show, let's say you're in a big city or a big progressive-leaning city, it's run by a big progressive-leaning city council, my guess is that if a business can show that it's particularly progressive when it comes to things ranging from inclusion, diversity, all the usual mantras that they come out with, that's probably going to help them in the bidding process compared to a company that doesn't have a track record in those areas.
We're talking with Dr. Samuel Gregg of the Acton Institute about the leftward drift of many American corporations. Are they gambling that the woke generation will stay woke as they grow older? How can Christians engage the culture on topics like science, politics, depression, sexuality, personhood, and more? Find out with the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February, Faith That Engages the Culture. It's written by regular guest Dr. Alfonso Espinosa. Faith That Engages the Culture is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. Faith That Engages the Culture.
Is your school or homeschool ready to take the next step in teaching students with learning challenges? We can help. The Simply Classical curriculum, voted number one for special learners, is available from Memoria Press for students with autism, learning disabilities, or Down syndrome. We provide everything you need for a full year. Use promo code LPR21 at simplyclassical.com. Simplyclassical.com.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Many educational institutions are governed by the whims of culture and are increasingly hostile to the Word of God. In contrast, Faith Lutheran School in Plano, Texas, provides classical Lutheran education rooted in God's Word for students preschool through grade 12. Simply put, we equip students to stand firm in the faith through solid education focused on wisdom and virtue. We offer in-person instruction as well as live online classes for remote learning. To learn more, visit flsplano.org, flsplano.org.
Jesus said, "I came that they may have life and have it abundantly." This is Monica Shannon, Life Coordinator for the Southern Illinois District Advocates for Life. We invite you to join your brothers and sisters in Christ for a peaceful, life-affirming prayer vigil from 10 to 11, Saturday morning, March 20th, at Planned Parenthood in Fairview Heights, Illinois. For more information, visit SIDAdvocatesForLife.com. SIDAdvocatesForLife.com.
Welcome back. This is Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the leftward drift of many American corporations. Dr. Samuel Gregg of the Acton Institute is our guest. He's author of a recent column for Public Discourse titled "Why Corporate America Loves the Left." So it sounds like, from what you've said before, Dr. Gregg, corporate America is basically gambling on a generation of millennials, largely the woke generation, staying woke as they grow older.
Yes, I think that's right. And as I have said in a number of different places, in different venues, I think that's a mistake. Because, as I said, people do change their minds. They get married. They start going to church. They see their taxes go up. They read some economics. But above all, I think many people, after a while, start getting tired of being told that because their skin color is this, or because they come from such and such a background, they are supposed to act and think in a particular way. And we saw a little bit of this in the 2020 election, where we saw record numbers of Black Americans and Hispanic Americans voting for the Republican Party and for Donald Trump. So what that tells us is that the notion that progressives have a lock hold on particular demographic groups is something that is increasingly open to question in a political environment and an electoral environment that I think is becoming even more fluid over time, and in which appeals to saying to people, "You're Hispanic, therefore you must vote this way," or "You are Black, therefore you must vote this way," those types of arguments, whether it's subtly expressed or directly expressed, are increasingly losing traction with many of these demographic groups. And I think that's something that corporate America may want to pay attention to.
Does corporate America have legal concerns that could also be driving their shift leftward?
Absolutely. I think this is often reflected in the application, for example, of anti-discrimination law, particularly parts of the Civil Rights Act and the way that they're being interpreted. And many companies, I think, are moving in a protective way to sort of say, "Well, no, you can't accuse us of being discriminatory because we have affirmative action policies," or "We give money to the following causes," or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it's true to say that many of them sense themselves to be under a certain degree of legal pressure, something that I think will accelerate if the Biden administration's Equality Act ends up getting passed, and which will cause, I think, a lot of businesses to react in a defensive way by trying to show how progressive or how woke they are as a way of basically warding off potential lawsuits, potential political attacks that could be enabled if such legislation is passed, or if existing legislation is interpreted in such a way as to enable more people to bring all sorts of different legal claims against businesses because they feel, quote-unquote, discriminated against.
So has our stereotype of business leaders as enthusiastic free marketers, has that been mistaken?
I think that's been mistaken for a very long time. And the reason I say that is because, I don't know about you, but in my experience, I'm not sure a majority of business leaders are in their heart of hearts pro-market. I think they're often pro-business, but pro-market and pro-business are two very different things. There are plenty of business leaders who don't like competition, who want political protection from competition, who want to go and basically spend most of their time lobbying legislators and people in the executive branch for favors and privileges that lock other people out of markets rather than being in the marketplace and being entrepreneurial, being creative, and trying to produce better and more goods at a lower price. For some businesses, the political calculus is that, and even the economic calculus, is that we'd rather go and lobby politicians. We'd rather get privileges, whether it's subsidies or having tariffs applied to our industry. We'd rather have all those things than get out in the marketplace and compete because we're established businesses. We have a certain market share, and the way we want to protect that is not by outcompeting our rivals, but never allowing our rivals to emerge in the first place. And this has been going on for a very, very long time. It was present in the early years of the United States. It's often called today crony capitalism, whereby free markets get replaced by what you might call political markets. And the focus of business leaders and entrepreneurs moves away from trying to satisfy consumer wants and needs and much more upon trying to obtain privileges from legislatures and the executive branch. That's been going on for a very, very, very long time. It's not a new phenomenon. What I guess is a little bit new is the way that more people are pointing this out in America and are saying things like, look, being pro-business is not the same thing as being pro-market. In fact, being pro-market in favor of a dynamic, competitive market economy is often at odds with being pro whoever happens to be the established businesses at a given time.
So who are business stakeholders and how do they affect corporate America?
Well, stakeholder theory is something that's emerged really since the 1980s. And the basic idea is that their prime responsibility is not so much to make a profit and therefore satisfy the requirements of their shareholders, but rather that they have multiple constituencies that they are obliged to support and follow. And these can range from things like very common sense things like clients you deal with, other businesses you partner with, to things as broad as the environment or capital P progress, or the people, or whatever the cause happens to be. And this has become very widespread in the business world, partly, I think, because many business leaders have recognized that this is a way of, if you like, trying to stave off a fair amount of anti-business sentiment that has always existed in the United States. But also, I think, because some business leaders have been convinced that this is, in fact, the way forward for business, that, in fact, they do have responsibilities to any number of groups that go beyond their shareholders. Now, the problem with this, of course, is that if you say, well, we, the board of X corporation, we have not just responsibilities to you, the shareholders, we also have responsibilities to the local community, to the environment, to the world community, that becomes a way for boards to say, well, look, we could actually perform better, we could return better profits, we could make more money, but we can't because we have all these other stakeholders that we have to answer to. So that is the way I think that stakeholder theory is increasingly working, and it's unfortunate that many businesses have bought into it. I think partly because they see it as a way of protecting themselves. They see it now as a type of cost of doing business issue. But also others have become intellectually convinced that this is, in fact, the way that business should be. I happen to think that's a big mistake, because I think that businesses have specific responsibilities that are different from other communities. So businesses, their primary responsibility is to pursue and realize certain economic goals. The goal of business is not world peace. The goal of business is not to the sort of overall protection of the world's environment. Yes, business should not pollute the environment. Yes, business should be very conscious and careful with the communities in which they exist. But their primary responsibility is that of delivering shareholder value. And when they move away from that, boards and executives become less and less accountable to the people who, after all, provide the capital that enables the business to function over the long term.
What is pluralistic stakeholderism?
Well, pluralistic stakeholderism is more or less what I've just been describing to you, insofar as there are stakeholder theories that I think are sort of pretty much common sense things, like be kind to people around you, don't rip off your customers, tell the truth, obey the legitimate laws and regulations that surround your industry. So if stakeholderism means that, then it's sort of just common sense business practice. But pluralistic stakeholderism means multiple levels of responsibility and accountability to any number of groups out there who claim, on whatever grounds, that they are in fact a stakeholder in a given business or a given industry. And that is, I think, when you start to see the accountability of executives and boards to the people who own the companies, which after all, in the case of publicly traded companies, are the shareholders. That's when you see those types of lines of accountability start to break down, because the accountability, when it's dispersed and when you become accountable to everyone, you're effectively accountable to no one.
Dr. Samuel Gregg is research director at the Acton Institute and author of a recent column for Public Discourse titled "Why Corporate America Loves the Left." When we come back, is corporate wokeness good for the overall economy?
Listen to the best of the church's music for the season of Lent at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the season of Lent, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
This is Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia University Chicago, with a message for parents, grandparents, and godparents of college-bound children. Concordia Chicago is a distinctive, comprehensive university of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We're devoted to our Lutheran confession and committed to strong academics. Please encourage your child, grandchild, or godchild to check out Concordia University Chicago at cuchicago.edu.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
For your next family vacation, consider Our Beach House, a charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.
Superstition is the belief that one event caused an unrelated event. It's often tied up with false beliefs about God and how He works in the world. Is there really such a problem with superstitions? Is there really such a problem with saying knock on wood or good luck? Explore this and more in the March issue of The Lutheran Witness. We will talk about scientism, superstition, New Age, and so much more. To order your copy, visit cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
The one thing we have to recognize that is true of New Testament biblical Christianity is that it embraces hope and never embraces despair.
I think thinking about the church not so much as an army engaged in war, as a community engaged in protest.
Apologetics is demonstrating that the proclamation of law and gospel itself is embedded in history.
The reason why we say that the Lord's Supper forgives sins, that baptism forgives sins, that absolution forgives sins, is because Jesus promised that those things forgive sins.
Well, you don't have to listen live to Play Issues, Etc. Soundbite of the Week. You'll find this week's contestants in Monday's podcast feed. Listeners with the best votes get the LPR bundle package. You can vote in advance at facebook.com/issuesetc, via Twitter at issuesetc, via email talkback@issuesetc.org. That's Issues, Etc. Soundbite of the Week, Friday, February 26th at 4:30 Central. We're talking about the leftward drift of many American business executives. Dr. Samuel Gregg of the Acton Institute is our guest. He's fellow for the Center of the Study of Law and Religion at Emory University and author of a recent column for Public Discourse titled Why Corporate America Loves the Left. So bottom line then, Dr. Gregg, is corporate wokeness good for the overall economy?
I don't think it is, because wokeness depends upon accepting a certain view of the world, a view of the world in which there are oppressors and oppressed, in which there is systematic injustice that riddles its way all through society, a view of the world in which everyone is suffering from a type of what Marx called false consciousness and they need to be enlightened as to reality around them, etc., etc. This is not new. This is sort of an old-fashioned Marxist way of understanding reality. And in the end, I think what business needs to understand is that those who are peddling all the different woke causes out there, they don't like business. They're essentially anti-market. They're essentially anti-business. They're essentially anti-private enterprise. They're essentially anti-property rights. They're essentially anti-competition. If you dig enough and you look into some of the groups that are peddling woke ideology, you soon discover that for all their talk about diversity and inclusion, et cetera, et cetera, they're not about these things at all. Moreover, if business goes down this path, then they seriously risk alienating that one half of the United States that does not view itself as progressive. So there are all sorts of very good economic reasons why businesses, and ranging from small businesses to very large corporations, should be very, very careful before they go down this path. Because in the end, I think, what they need to understand is that those who are heavily invested in the woke ideology really have no particular interest in a dynamic market economy, and their essentially anti-business mindset is just beneath the surface. You don't have to look very far to find it.
Do you foresee a day when conservative traditionalists might need to organize boycotts to get the attention of corporate America, or might be forced to start their own businesses?
Well, that's already happening. I think, for example, when Chick-fil-A were subject to all sorts of pressures by progressives, people rallied. People rallied behind them. We've seen, for example, Pepsi and Nike go down this path of, you know, really embracing woke agendas. And the backlash against them has been considerable. Another organization, of course, is the NFL. They have lost huge viewing numbers as a consequence of embracing and propagating this sort of oppressor, oppressed, woke view of the world. So there's a cost that American businesses need to understand. If you go down this path, you will alienate people and people will vote with their wallets and with their feet. So that's one thing that's already happening, and it can be quite effective. The second thing, I think, which is already happening, is that people are able, in the conditions of a free and open economy, to set up their own networks, to set up their own businesses. And that's been going on for a very, very long time. So it's entirely possible that thanks to living in a relatively open economy, conservative-minded people, traditionalist-minded people, can go down this path if they choose to. Now, one would like to live in a society where we don't have to think that way, where we don't have to think, well, I need to create my own business, or conservatives need to create their own businesses because I can't stand dealing with these companies that are so woke and are trying to continually push this quote-unquote diversity agenda upon us. It'd be much better, I think, if businesses stepped back and said, we are not political organizations, we are not political activists, we are not ideological warriors. The purpose of a business is to generate economic profits that serve customers, that serve shareholders, and above all, generate the type of wealth that all societies need if they're going to get more and more people out of poverty and enable really good things in society, ranging from good universities to good museums to good philanthropy to happen. If businesses took a step back and started to think, reflect very seriously upon what it is they actually do that's different from a political party, that's different from a charity, that's different from a religious group, that's different from an NGO, that would be far more preferable, I think, than conservatives having to sort of just create, if you like, a parallel economy.
You mentioned earlier the Equality Act, which President Biden has expressed pretty much unfettered enthusiasm for. Could the passage of that act actually be a sea change when it comes to corporate America, basically making them double down on their already progressive policies?
Well, this is part of the problem, right? I mean, you mentioned before the type of legal environment in which we exist. And I have no doubt that there'll be efforts on the part of some businesses to protect themselves by, again, some of the implications of what could happen as a consequence of this Equality Act, by embracing some of these ideas, at least at the surface level, even if what goes on beneath the surface is rather different. Now, my guess is that businesses that go down this path and start, for example, proactively discriminating against particular groups because they don't fit the category of any number of allegedly oppressed groups, I think there'll be plenty of legal challenges to some of that legislation, because I think it will it will violate some of the equal protection clauses of the Constitution, which have been well established for a very long time. So businesses will have a choice. They can either embrace this sort of woke, diverse, inclusiveness agenda, or they can say, you know, once the government gets into the business of dictating to us that we must hire whatever number of people as a matter of law rather than as a matter of preference, then a great deal of our freedom starts to become eroded. So I think businesses are going to have to choose whether they knuckle down and do what they're told effectively, or whether they're willing to start challenging some of these things in court. Because here's the thing. Much of this will mean, if some of this goes through, and I'm not sure all of it will get passed in its present form, but what it will mean is that in many cases, businesses will find themselves being legally pressured to hire people on the basis of things like skin color rather than their qualifications and merits. So we'll see a situation emerging whereby businesses are being told what matters in an employee or a potential employee is their identity, what group they are told that they belong to, rather than their individual skills, abilities, merits, and demerits.
Finally, then, what do you make of the conservative adage, go woke, go broke?
Well, I think it's certainly a risk. It's certainly a risk for businesses that go down this path, because at least half the country is not progressive in its politics, is not interested in being told that they are somehow racist or some type of phobic because they don't embrace progressive causes. Now, I think if you are actively willing to directly alienate half the American population, that's a huge business risk. And any business that proposes to go down that path, whether it's small or medium-sized or large corporation, I think they should think very seriously about that, because good business doesn't involve restricting your markets. Good business involves expanding and growing your markets. And if you basically say, we are ruling out one half of America's population because of our ideological commitments, I think you'll see some of that reflected in lower profits and, in some cases, some significant competition emerging that probably wouldn't otherwise emerge, except for the fact that in many cases, many Americans are going to say, that's it, I've had enough, I'm not going to deal with these people, I'm going to create my own business, or I'm going to deal with businesses that don't impose ideological agendas upon their customers.
Dr. Samuel Gregg is Research Director at the Acton Institute, Fellow of the Center for the Study of Law and Religion at Emory University, and author of a recent column for Public Discourse titled "Why Corporate America Loves the Left." You can read it and find out more about the Acton Institute at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Dr. Gregg, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Ad Crucem has produced several new church banners for Palm Sunday. They'll even customize these banners for your church's specifications and requirements. Find out more at adcrucem.com. That's adcrucem.com. Adcrucem.com. Dr. Alfonso Espinosa joins us on the other side for part three of our series, How Christians Interact with the Culture. We'll talk politics a little bit more, personhood, and sexuality.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we continue our trek through St. Matthew with mocked, forsaken, wonders at his death, Jesus buried, and guard at the tomb. Join me, Pastor Will Wheaton, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily 15-minute verse-by-verse Bible study on demand. Listen at thewordendures.org or your favorite podcast provider.
What does it mean to live the Christian life? Reaching out in mercy to our neighbors, receiving our Lord's gifts in worship, and proclaiming His truth to the world. The Lutheran Church Extension Fund comes alongside churches and individuals to help them live out this beautiful Christian life every day. This year, we have a ripe opportunity to bring Christ to a hurting world. Discover the role you can play in this great work. Call 800-843-5233 or visit lcef.org.
Holy Cross Evangelical Lutheran Church, Albany, Oregon, is a mid-Willamette Valley LCMS congregation where the liturgy lives and God's people worship as one, with sound biblical doctrine, weekly communion, and a clear confession of Christ crucified for the sin of the world. Please join us at 2515 Queen Avenue Southeast or visit our website at www.holycrosslutheranalbany.org.
We're supported by listeners like you. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by becoming an Issues Etc. congregational sponsor: Bethlehem Lutheran, Sylvan Grove, Kansas; Faith Lutheran Church and Preschool, Marinette, Wisconsin; Holy Cross Lutheran, Albany, Oregon; Lutheran Church of Our Redeemer, Peekskill, New York; Mount Zion Lutheran, Castle Rock, Colorado; Prince of Peace Lutheran, San Diego, California; St. Athanasius Lutheran, Fairfax, Virginia; St. Paul Lutheran, Austin, Texas; Trinity Lutheran, Arapahoe, Nebraska; and Zion Lutheran, Detroit, Michigan. Find out how your confessional Lutheran church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Support, Donate, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation becomes an Issues Etc. sponsor, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal.